and welcome to SMPD, the podcast where we look back at the cartoons that shape our childhood. You will probably tell from the intro music, if you're anywhere near as old as us, that we're looking at an absolute classic this week, the BBC legend that is Will o' the Wisp, suggested by Sarah Clark on Twitter, London Hammer. Thanks for sending in, Sarah. It was on our list, I think, but yes, it was one that we were taking a little while to get around to for some reason, and I don't know why. So as soon as Sarah suggested it, I was like, yeah, definitely, we'll bump that one up. Yeah. But prior to diving in on Will o' the Wisp, we did have some feedback on our KBS episode as well, from Thomas Meehan over on Twitter at T19M96. Obviously, we had the Christmas specials, so we didn't do feedback just before the end of the year. So just wanted to give Thomas a quick shout out. He said, hi, guys. The recent episode on KBS was unexpected. KBS was one I vividly remember watching when I was younger. So thanks. So that's interesting to me because I know that, Thomas is actually a little bit younger than us as well. Yeah. So it's always good to see that these shows still kind of endure, which I think we said on the KBS episode as well. And it, you know, it was one that, we had a great time watching as well. I think it probably surprised us just as much as it surprised him.
I think you're right. Yeah.
So thanks as always for, getting in touch, Thomas, and we're glad you enjoyed it. And yeah, thanks again to Sarah for suggesting that we do Will o' the Wisp, because actually I've been looking forward to doing this one for quite some time. This is a show that I hold very dear to my heart. Now I'm not sure whether is this one where that age difference is a thing for us.
It kind of is. I mean, when this came on, I wasn't even come. This predates me by a couple of years. But I do remember, because I think it reran, I think it was on BBC first, and then I think Channel 4 might have picked it up, or maybe ITV picked it up, so it played elsewhere, around about 1988, 89, I think.
It played on cable briefly as well, I remember. For those of you who, again... are older, and I say this as I approach my 40th trip around the sun, for those of you that are old farts like me, you may remember when satellite was first launched in the UK, we didn't just have Sky, we had Sky and we had Galaxy. They were two different satellite channels, and while Sky had a lot of original programming, the other had a lot of repeats. Now, I've mentioned before that we had a dodgy cable box in my house, and that picked up Galaxy TV but not Sky. So we eventually got a Sky satellite dish, but before that, we had the really dodgy Galaxy sat. Now think like Freeview these days, basically. It was all the shit channels, okay?
Yeah, the one nobody would pay for.
The one nobody, yeah. And so there was a hell of a lot of reruns. It was basically UK gold wall to wall. So Will o' the Wisp ran on that. And then I think you're right. I think Channel 4 did eventually pick it up as well, but it was definitely a BBC production to begin with. It is around the same age as me, actually. You say you were come, this launched, I think, 81. Yeah, 81. So I do, incidentally, I don't very often do research, as you all know, but I do actually have quite a bit of knowledge on Will o' the Wisp. Way back when I did my BA, I wrote a paper on Will o' the Wisp as part of an in-depth analysis of the cultural impact of children's TV on today's generation. So children's TV from the 70s and 80s, and Will o' the Wisp was one that I instinctively was drawn to. There are a few others as well. But as a result of that, I have the complete collection of Will o' the Wisp along with, like, this isn't one I've even had to go looking for. As soon as we were doing Will o' the Wisp, I was just like, right, okay, there it is on the bookshelf. And incidentally, I say complete collection, this thing is one disc. There are like two seasons, 26 episodes. Yeah. That's your lot. You can watch the whole thing in just over 2 hours, like everything, lock, stock, a lot.
I mean, there was a second season in 2005, which was done by Bobby Spargo.
Yes. Now, I've never seen.
I've not been. What
I will
that
call
down.
The reboot. I've seen images from it. I have never actually seen it. But yeah, we're very much talking about the original today. So yeah, I remember it very fondly as a child. It was something I got obsessed with very, very early on. It was a cartoon I remember just always being there. We've talked about this before, about how there were some shows that just seemed to be always on, and Will o' the Wisp was one of those shows. I distinctly remember it being on like right at the end of children's programming. You'd get Will o' the Wisp,
and then it was on before the news,
and then you'd get adults, and then latterly then as it was coming towards kind of God knows how many reruns that it had. They'd show it in the lunchtime as well. So you'd come from home from school. It used to be on BBC Two then, not BBC One. But you'd put the TV on and you'd get like Mr. Ben, Will-O-The-Wisp, stuff like that. They'd have like four or five cartoons over the span of like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And this was always one of those as well. So I've seen a hell of a lot of Will-O-The-Wisp over my lifetime. I've had it. God knows how many Will-O-The-Wisp books. I've had Will-O-The-Wisp merchandise. Like I really fucking loved this thing. I also found it vaguely terrifying, which I had a brief exchange with Sarah on Twitter about. there's something even to this day about Evil Edna that just freaks me the fuck out. I think it's just that she's so bizarre. Like the idea of making her a TV.
Well, that was one thing I never understood because, I saw this in reruns. I didn't see it first time out, but I saw this in reruns. So I would have been, six or seven or something like that. And we had a TV. There was a TV in our living room. So I was like, hang on, is that fucking thing going to come alive now? But I never understood because everything else was sort of, they were either supernatural or they were completely natural. You had a caterpillar. You had some sort of thinking dog. You had a cat. So you had these things that were rooted in, as cartoons tend to be, they're rooted in nature. They're things that we can identify with for the most part. Okay, the Wisp, not so much. But then there's a fucking TV in the middle of the forest.
Yeah.
Why?
I could never understand. Because even, like characters like Will-O-The-Wisp, a Will-O-The-Wisp in folklore, not that you knew this as a child, but is this kind of guiding light that people would see in a forest. And they're seen as quite mischievous and stuff. Yeah. And then even the Beast has got this kind of vaguely, he looks kind of like a Gruffalo or something like that, doesn't he? He's got like this vaguely, like, yes, that's not a real animal. I'm aware of this, okay? But, aside from looking like a giant hairy penis, he kind of does look like as if he might, potentially could exist. He does look like a hairy dick. Come on. Like, it's not just me here, right?
No, it's not.
He looks like a big hairy dick.
I just hadn't made that connection, which is unusual for me. But yeah, you're right.
Absolutely looks like a walking dick. Again, this is one of those shows. Like, it is weird, okay? I find it fucking hilarious. Even today, rewatching it again. And like I said, I've held the DVD up. This is something I've watched numerous times. So it's not like I'm coming to this with fresh eyes at all. I still find it funny. Still makes me laugh. And it's just because it's so fucking weird. And because there definitely is, we talk about how some of these shows are completely innocent and some of them just manage to slip this kind of these double entendres and this kind of slightly subversive humor under the radar. And this has that in fucking spades.
Well, let's be fair. It's fucking Kenneth Williams.
It's Kenneth Williams. Yeah. I said I love the show and it is through no small measure because of the just phenomenal work that Kenneth Williams does in this. He is every voice.
Yes.
When we look back at Raggy Dolls again, and we say about how we had that whole problem with Neil Innes's performance and how all the voices were the same, like every single one of these characters feels like a unique living, breathing character. And he changes his voice entirely for each and every one of them. Like Will-O-The-Wisp is unmistakably Kenneth Williams.
Yes.
The others
could be anybody.
Could be anybody. And who knew he was that vocally talented?
Well, that's it. And I mean, like, I think for our generation, certainly he will always be Kenneth Williams of the Carry On films.
Yes.
And obviously Will-O-The-Wisp, but no, that's where
I was going to say for me, he'll always actually be Will-O-The-Wisp.
But that's the majority of people who don't know him from this will know him as that. So then you try and reconcile those two characters, those two personae. And I think, fucking hell, is that the same guy? And I mean, not to take anything from Neil Innes' performance and not to deride him anyway, but comparing Neil Innes to Kenneth Williams is like comparing me to fucking Bono. There's apples and oranges, and then there's apples and fucking quasars.
Why Bono? Why did you go for Bono? Like, you could have gone for somebody cool, at least.
I have no idea. Well, I'm not cool, so
Well, you're cooler than Bono. Jesus.
My broken freezer is cooler than fucking Bono.
Yeah, exactly. You could have gone.
I have no idea where I went for Bono, but it's not comparing like for like, and I don't mean that in any disrespectful way to Neil Innes, but I would put as a voice actor for children's television, I would put one far, far higher than the other.
Yeah, and again, like, okay, so the story behind Will-O-The-Wisp, for those of you who don't know, is that it actually spun out of a series of British Gas commercials. Now, incidentally, I cannot, even when I was writing my initial paper, and that paper was nearly 20 odd years ago now, Jesus Christ, I'm old. I cannot find any reference to these adverts being rerun. Okay, I know they're from the 70s. I know for a fact that I have seen these adverts, and it's not in doing research for that paper. I have seen these adverts on an actual telly. I have seen Will-O-The-Wisp associated with British Gas. So they must have rerun in the mid-80s as well, if the campaign wasn't even still running.
The campaign was probably still running, but if you think, I mean, they don't do it so much now because you don't tend to have like the advertising characters now. But you always did have that. You had characters that would be around for years, and you might only get like three or four different, maybe call it half a dozen adverts a year. They'd be on all the fucking time. And especially, you know, your British Gas, your Manweb as well as the time, your Swalex and people like that. They would always be running because you didn't really have a choice of your suppliers. So you had British Gas and you had your local network operator for electric. So they would be advertising. So you know who the fuck was getting your money every month. But beyond that, it didn't really matter.
Yeah, it's weird, actually, isn't it? The British Gas even felt the need to advertise. Like, where else are you going? You want gas? You're going to British Gas, or you're not having gas.
You didn't have a choice at that time. It was, you want gas, that's it.
They are the very definition of monopoly. You know, it was the same with British Telecom. If you wanted your phone, it was everything. Like, you went to that one central place. But yeah, it did spin out of a series of British Gas adverts.
Yeah, and I've seen them as well, but I can't. I mean, I say by the time. By the time I would have been conscious of TV, I mean, those ads would have been 10 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen Will-O-The-Wisp on the British Gas logo as well in print and things like that. Like, because it always, I remember as a child seeing it and being like, what the fuck is Will-O-The-Wisp doing on the gas bill and stuff like that. Like, I definitely remember him being on it. Because this was, for me, and we've talked about this with some of the other shows as well, but this was a multimedia thing for me. I loved Will-O-The-Wisp on TV, but I remember distinctly there being loads of picture books. I had a Will-O-The-Wisp record. Slight sidetrack, not like us on this show, I know. when I was younger, my dad was a trade union representative for his company as well. And as part of that, he would have to attend sort of meetings in London I want to say it was probably like every 6 to 8 weeks. But when you're a kid, you have no concept of time. So it felt like he was fucking always going to London. We didn't have the internet then. We didn't have fucking, mobile phones and stuff like that. So you had a meeting, you physically got on the train and you went to the place. Now, I guess he felt guilty about leaving me because he'd always come home with a present. And those presents would invariably be sticker books. Don't know why. I've always loved stickers. Maybe this is where it started. and the absolute best one I ever received, and I still remember it to this day, and I wish I could find it because I know I haven't thrown it out, but in turfing that house out, I have not found it anywhere. I had a reusable Will-O-The-Wisp sticker book, and I fucking loved that thing. And when I say reusable, it was like, it was a story book that had like very basic words, and you'd have a sheet of like vinyl stickers that you could peel off and put on to your heart's content. So you made your own pictures.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember those because you used to get, I didn't have a Beano one. And so you'd have your annual and you'd have your sticker book and stuff every year. And you'd get your stickers that didn't move. Your numbered stickers, you put in the right place and you left them there and you collected them and swapped them and all that shit. But in the middle, you always had a glossy page.
Yes, with like a bit of stickers, card you could move or around. Something. It was.
You could move them, and they were transparent. The backgrounds were transparent, and they were slightly embossed, so you could peel them easier.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that. I'm sure I had a Dennis Menace one.
Yeah, there was all sorts of them, and like I said, it would either be he would bring me one of those, or he would bring me. You could also, and I don't think you can still get these. I'll bet you can still get those sticky vinyl things. But do you remember like Paint by Numbers?
Yeah,
there was a version of that with stickers as well. Where you'd have different color stickers and the stickers would be on numbered sheets. And then you'd have a page with just like loads of numbers on it. And so you'd peel the sticker off and you'd put the sticker. So it was kind of half a jigsaw puzzle and half a sticker book, if that makes sense. Because you'd have to have the right shape sticker with the right number to get the right color and the right shape to make up these pictures.
I don't remember that.
I had loads of those as well because he kept fucking bringing them back. I mean, I guess they were like cheap fucking presents, right? He's not buying me a toy or anything. He's buying me so in his head, it's educational as well. And
somebody can pick up in the train station on the way back.
Yeah, exactly. Like in my head, I'm thinking, oh, this is cool. He's brought me a present back from London when in actuality, he's just stopped at a fucking news kiosk and go, what the fuck have you got?
Yeah, what's cheap?
Yeah, and like he was a fucking 99p sticker book. Or what? I mean, 99p was probably a lot of money then. I don't know. He was like a 20p sticker book, whatever it would have been. Yeah. Fucking hell, I've got no concept of the value of money in the 80s. What do I know? I was a kid.
All I know. No concept in the 2020s, alone fucking 80s.
All I know is 10 pence bought you a big fucking bag of sweets. Yeah. That's about as much as I know. Like if you had 20p for a mix-up, you were fucking rich. But 10 pence bought you a fuckload of sweets.
A mix-up for fucking years.
That's what they are. They're mix-ups. Even to this day, like Star Mix, like, yeah, okay, Star, they're mix-ups. Call them what you like. Star Mix is just a brand of mix-up. I mean, it's not as good because all you get is like the little chewy ones. You don't get things like flying saucers and yeah. You don't get the little white mice and stuff like that. But it's just basically a fucking brand of mix-up, innit? And Pick-A-Mix is just Chav's mix-up, innit? Yeah. It's just so you can go and steal it. That's the only thing Pick-A-Mix is. At least with a proper mix-up, you had to, like, pay them, and they did it behind the counter in front of you, so yeah. You couldn't steal the fucking things. Pick-A-Mix, everybody's just, can you imagine if Woolworths was still open today with coronavirus? Everybody just sticking their fucking hands in the, yuck.
Saying that, in the supermarkets now, it's all wrapped stuff.
Oh, okay.
So you can still buy Pick-A-Mix, but it's all individually wrapped stuff. So you can't, it's not. I mean, I got one for number two the other day because he missed out on something, so I picked him one up in Tesco's. And yeah, it's all like, you know, like the pre-wrapped. You know, here's three, you know, three chocolate fingers in a fucking wrapper. Here's, you know, a couple of you can get fucking opal fruits. What are they called? Starburst.
Well done. Opal fruits. Well done. There'll always be opal fruits.
They will always be opal fruits. But. Yeah, they had individual. They'd emptied out a couple of multi bags or whatever the fuck they'd done. You know, it was all stuff like that. So you can still get Pick-A-Mix, but it's all, you don't get any of the good shit. It's the stuff you normally leave there.
Yeah, it's stuff nobody actually fucking wants.
But what were the ones called? They were like fucking white chocolate discs with hundreds of thousands on top.
Jazzies.
Thank you.
How could you forget a name like Jazzies?
I don't know.
Yeah, they were Jazzies. They were always. I didn't like those though. Those were always the ones I'd fucking bin.
I like those.
It's
just an odd amount of sugar on the top, so of course I fucking like them.
But like in my corner shop, you could go down, and if you had a 10p mix, you could literally like use it like credit. You could go like, oh, well, I'll have two of them, one of them. But that was no fun. Because if you did that, you knew what you were getting.
Yeah. It was 10 pence. Surprise me.
Yeah. So it was a bit of Russian roulette. And I'd always end up with loads of fucking Jazzies. I'd have Jazzies and ice cups, and I fucking hate both of them.
Ice cups?
Oh, they're like little really sickly sweet chocolate that came wrapped in like foil. It kind of looks like you know Reese's peanut butter cups. Have you seen the mini ones where you get the mini peanut butter cups and they're in that little paper case?
Yeah.
So imagine that, but it's just horrible sweet chocolate with like a foil. I don't even know how to describe it other than that. They were fucking
not ringing a bell.
Google ice cups, you'll probably see them. You'll know them immediately when you see them.
Right.
And as I've said that, my phone's just come on. And she's now showing me pictures of ice cups. Never podcast with your phone unlocked next to you, guys. This is what happens. Good job. That's the only thing she's picked up on, and not giant hairy penis. That's all I'm saying. Right.
Anyway.
Back on topic. Yeah. So Will-O-The-Wisp, I had these sticker books and everything as well. And even the sticker books, like I'd have the Edna sticker and I would just be looking at it going like, she's fucking terrifying. But... you know, to bring it back around, the reason I went for Will-O-The-Wisp when I started doing this cultural analysis is because there is so much to be got out. Right, first of all, these are 5-minute episodes. The stories are fucking pointless.
Yeah.
Okay, you can't even say they're stories. They're proper shorts. It's a 5-minute gag. That is all it is. And you have to meet it on its own level as that. It's not trying to be anything else. There is no narrative involved. It is 5 minutes. Here's a character. Here's a setup. Here's a gag, and we're out. We're done. That's every single episode. And it might invariably be a little bit of business leading up to the punchline, but there's no story as such. But within this construct of Doily Wood, there is this whole fucking microcosm of society going on. You have all of these characters that, I mean, nothing happens by accident. We've talked about this in the show before, and we've been called out for perhaps reading too much into things and perhaps supposing a little bit too much. But then when you get a show like this, like there is so much in there. It's not leaping to conclusions. It is, in the words of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you take a step and their conclusions were.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's all there for you. So things like you look at Edna, and there's no reason for her to be a TV other than the obvious connotation, you know, that it's the 80s and TV is bad for you and rots your mind, which is ironic considering that the whole thing is
on TV.
All right,
but a nice gag, actually. There was an episode, I've only watched a couple today, actually. But there's one called Thoughts of the Moog.
Yep.
And
that's the one where he gets a wish with the genies. Is that the one you're talking about?
No. So this is when he starts thinking, and then thinks about what he is. And then so he thinks, and Edna traps him in a cloud, in a thought cloud, and sends him up to the sky. And then they make it rain, because, you know, that's how you get rid of clouds. They make it rain. He falls and he lands on Edna. And the closing gag is, look, I'm on television.
Nice.
And see? It's such a simple gag. It's such a stupid gag. I was downstairs, I was cooking food for the kids, and I actually burst out laughing. I was like, why the fuck am I laughing at this? Because that's funny.
It's a funny fucking show.
I wasn't expecting that at all.
It is a funny fucking show. And the gags aren't sophisticated. Like, in some cases, they are quite smutty. But that's fine. They're funny, and they're not, you know, they're not blatantly smutty in a way that's going to be offensive to kids. You know, you do have to go digging a little bit for that, and a lot of that comes out of, as we say, Kenneth Williams's performance as well. That's his personality when he's being Will o' the Wisp. He's being that kind of sort of smutty Kenneth Williams that we know from the Carry On film. So you can't avoid that. But it's funny, and you're saying about the Thoughts of the Moog. There's an episode as well. I'm not sure if it's that one, but there is definitely an episode where he gets like a genie by licking a magic bone.
Yes.
There you go again.
It's called the Wishbone.
There you go. So, yeah. And there is at least 30 seconds of go on, lick my bone. Go on, lick it. Lick the bone. And as
whatever works, yeah.
And especially as an immature adult, that's fucking hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. You know, then you get the random things like, wow, what are they called? There's a name from the astronauts.
Astronauts,
I was going to say the space nuts. It's the astronauts. Like, just fucking bonkers, but they're hilarious. They're a bunch of astronauts who live inside a toadstool and go flying up space. Yeah. They're astronauts. Like, absolutely, it's such a funny show. And I just don't think it would exist today. I don't think you could get something this random and this creative, especially just out of an advert.
No, like, that's right.
I just don't. When I talk about cultural impact, the way that it is endured, you know, Evil Edna is a presence that I will carry through me my entire life. You know, as soon as Sarah mentioned Will o' the Wisp, I was like, Evil Edna. First place I went, didn't even go to Will o' the Wisp first. I went, Evil Edna. First thing I thought of.
Yeah.
So did Sarah, incidentally. She mentioned that she was a great villain, I seem to remember, on her original tweet. And she is. She's a through and through villain, you know, this fucking TV. I think it was the way she walked as well, because she was a proper old fashioned TV on a stand. And that in itself is probably an alien concept to some people today, that TVs came on a fucking trolley.
They didn't live on the walls.
Yeah. And our TV in the house had these fucking silver kind of polished chrome legs that it stood on that ended in a T-piece. Looked exactly like fucking Evil Edna, and it had an aerial on top and stuff like that. So it was something that was in your living room. It's kind of the Poltergeist effect, isn't it? When you're watching fucking Poltergeist and seeing the TV on there, and then, especially as a kid, you kind of don't want to be alone with static on the TV for a little while.
Is you, by the way, apologies for the intro on the video.
Oh, is that what you're doing? Okay.
Yeah. We can't use the music, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can.
You can't. Yeah.
You can't.
I can't. YouTube don't like it. They keep telling me off.
Whatever. I do the audio, Mark does the video. So I can, if you've heard the theme tune, you can thank me for that. And you will hear the theme tune. I've already got hold of it. There's all of that that goes with Edna. There's definitely the connotation that the television is bad for kids. You know, it's no accident, because, as we say, that the TV is such a random thing to have in the woods, and such a random thing for a witch to be. Like, why would you make a witch a television? Like, why not just make her a witch?
Yeah.
Like, she could be anything.
Yeah,
you know,
they're in the woods. You could be any woodland creature.
Yeah, but
no, anything of the same sort of size. You haven't got to either sacrifice the scale or draw it massive, but some sort of sprite.
Yeah,
because, you know, you've got a wisp. So why not have a sprite?
Yeah, why not? So there's that. But then We talked in Raggy Dolls about how imperfect everybody was and how it never played into their character. And there was never anything kind of that anybody suffered any consequences because of that or had to overcome anything because of that. And even in its 5 minutes of absolute just nonsense, this manages to bring a lot of that through. You know, you've got characters like Mavis, who's a fairy, but she's a fat fairy and she's so fat that she can't fly.
Yeah.
And they don't shy away from that. They flat out say, look, she's overweight. They call her fat. They don't call her overweight. They call her fat. You know, it's distasteful.
It was the 80s. You get away with her.
I don't care for that personally, but that's because I was a fat kid. And so, yes, that's hurtful. But then Mavis is always able to overcome that somehow, generally by being a bit of a clumsy buffoon and lucking out. But she always makes good because of it. And it doesn't seem to bother her. You know, she's a fairy, but she's not conventionally beautiful then, as we would think of, because she's overweight and she's got buck teeth and like this weird bowl cut on her hair with this crazy fringe. Yeah, so they haven't shied away from that. You've already talked about the Moog, who is just the stupidest motherfucking being on the face of the planet, but he's kind of adorable for it. I incidentally knew loads of dogs named Moog growing up as well. So that's something that pervaded into culture, certainly in the 80s and the 90s. And then, you know, even looking at, you know, his giant walking penis himself, the Beast, like even when he starts off and we meet him, I don't know if you watched how many of them you've watched, but if you watch the whole run very early on, you do meet him as a prince. It might even be the pilot episode. I think it is the pilot episode.
I didn't see that.
Okay, so the Beast story is that he is actually a handsome prince that gets turned into a beast by Evil Edna.
Yeah.
But even as a handsome prince, he's kind of this just foppish, idiotic prince with a speech impediment, which he carries through into his performance as the Beast. So you've got this now presumably ferocious looking man dick, who,
as opposed to a woman dick,
as it came out, I was like, you know what I meant, but
exactly what you meant.
Yeah, but that just kind of doesn't work, does it? That was, yeah, whatever. That's why we don't edit man dicks, everybody, as opposed to chick dicks. Yeah.
Neither of which will appear on the video, just so you know.
I mean, if they did, that's us kicked off YouTube. I mean, maybe just insert a picture of the Beast here and you could draw the outline of the dick. Well, no, you don't even have to draw the outline. It's later. He looks like a fucking walking dick. He looks like one of the little miniature dicks from Big Mouth. Like, you know, the little bag of dicks. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, he's got this speech impediment. And so then when he's, you know, later on this, I mean, he's never ferocious, but he could look quite ferocious, you know, because he's this monster. He's still got this speech impediment. You know, you've got Car Wash.
Yeah. That was glasses. The Noel Coward fucking one.
Yeah. Now, Cat's supposed to have great eyesight. No, let's make him short-sighted. Let's stick some glasses.
Give him a character flaw.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of thought gone into these characters, and there's a lot of skewing of convention is what I'm getting at here. And again, you know, this was off the back of a fucking British Gas advert and they wanted 5 minute episodes. It would have been easy to have just gone, okay, well, Will-O-The-Wisp, so it's got to be a wood. Doily Wood, incidentally, does exist as well. Not the one in the cartoon, but it's a wood, I believe, in Oxfordshire. I wouldn't hold me to that, but yeah. I've got a feeling when
Storage
I researched
it. Doily Wood's a small beech wood in Oxfordshire near the director's home.
There you go. That's not bad for something I researched 20 years ago, is it? so that's an actual thing as well. So it would have been very easy to just make this about a bunch of woodland creatures or something like that. But no, there's actually been intent going to this of like, okay, well, what's a fairy supposed to look like? Okay, now how can I subvert that? You know, and what would a witch look like in this circumstance? Okay, but what can I put on top of that? What can I layer on top of that to make it more interesting? And so there's a lot of thought gone into this.
Yeah, a lot of work has gone into the development of this.
Absolutely, the characters especially. And, you know, I think that's a big reason of why, you know, I was so excited to talk about it some 40 years fucking later now. When I've rewatched it numerous times. And like I say, when I say rewatched it, this isn't like when we watch some of the shows and they're 25, 30 minutes of the clip. So, you know, even the really good ones, like I'm fucking still watching Pokemon and I'm still watching Kim Possible. Okay, I am keeping up with these. But they take a long time to watch. Like if I've got a spare 2 hours, I can watch the whole fucking show. And I have done that numerous times because it's so fucking entertaining.
So I went back to it. I saw this in reruns in about 1988 or something like that on Channel 4 or S4C it would have been. And then I hadn't really thought about it much. And then when Brave came out, which was what, 2011-ish, there were something like that. There were wisps in that, which followed to the Witch's house. And so that kind of, after watching that, and so I think I was in Australia at the time, and I think I just sort of found myself, I watched Brave, and I found myself going, wonder if I can find that. And then again, internet not being what it is today, I found a few clips, I found the odd bit, but not masses. So that was something then I went back to looking, for. And I probably picked this up about 3 or 4 years ago, and again, watched the odd episode, but not masses of it. So this was quite nice for me, because I'm certainly not as familiar with it as you are, but I had enough background with it to go, okay, I can watch that, that's fine. And then as I've watched it, and as I've watched a couple today, just because I haven't had a chance to get through them, and I was looking and going, that's fucking, this is 40 years old, and it still makes me laugh than most of the shit that's on today.
Yeah, and being 40 years old as well, I'd argue it's still actually better animated than some of the more recent stuff that we've watched as well.
Yes, definitely.
Certainly better animated than most of the stuff of its time. I think the animation in this is actually really fucking good.
It's really slick. I say it hasn't aged well. No, it hasn't been remastered and up-revved very well. But you look at it, and as long as you're not trying to watch it on a fucking on a 50-inch TV. It looks fine. I was watching it on my phone while I was cooking the kids' food, and it looked absolutely fine. You didn't suffer any. There wasn't a great deal of glitching in it. There wasn't a great deal of problems with it. And again, a lot of the stuff we watch, even watching it on a phone screen, which is like 6 inches or something like that, it's still you still get things that are really fucking pixely, or they glitch and they jar every time there's a particularly complex movement in it, or when you cut between a light frame and a dark frame, you get that sort of problematic transfer with it. Whereas these, they seem to have uploaded really well.
Yeah, I mean, I did watch it on a large TV through a Blu-ray player, because I've got the disc. It's a fucking DVD. I don't think this exists on Blu-ray. So you've got
It would have been worked on to get it to DVD quality, though, wouldn't it?
Yes. I wouldn't say it's had a scrub by any stretch of the imagination, but obviously the Blu-ray player will upscale. It looks fine. I mean, it just looks very old. There's a lot of noise on it. But it looks fine. It's not. I've seen worse stuff remastered, I'll be honest. And it kind of adds to the charm, I think, as well, that it still looks of that age. That what you notice more than anything is the audio, unfortunately, because the audio hasn't been remastered. And that's always the thing that I do notice, rather than the video. We've always said it with our own stuff as well. Things can look like shit, but as long as people can hear what's going on and follow a story, you'll be cut a lot of slack. And that's definitely the case with this. The audio sadly isn't up to snuff. I've probably got Books on Tape, in fact, of Will of the Wisp, which have got better audio than this DVD. That's another thing I had, Books on Tape. Again, done by Kenneth Williams as well. Ironically, fucking hated the thing. Just by the by as well. Did not like Will o' the Wisp at all. Didn't understand it. Didn't get it. Thought it was pointless.
But he got paid,
It was a payday. But again, for somebody that, considering he didn't like the source material then, he pours himself into it. He is not phoning this thing in at all. His performance is phenomenal. Particularly, and we haven't even talked about him yet. We've talked about some of the other characters, but we haven't actually talked about Arthur. No. And, outside of Will o' the Wisp, who's our narrator, I mean, Arthur really is our lead. Most of the stories revolve around Arthur, who's this kind of cockney caterpillar. It's the only way I can describe him, really. But he's, considering it's Kenneth Williams, Arthur is the furthest thing from Kenneth Williams that you can imagine. He's a blokey, cockney caterpillar.
Yeah. Now, the other one I watched today, so I watched two today. I watched The Chrysalis. Where he's like, well, I'm gonna turn it, because they're talking about moths, and he's like, fuck it, I'm gonna turn into one. So he makes himself a chrysalis, and he comes out with a fucking suit. And again, some really nice gags in there. The suit gets ruined, and it's a snail comes along, and so he rented that from us. Oh, no, who are you? We're Moth Bros. And it's like, that's just so fucking stupid. But so the effect it's just had on you is exactly what it did to me as well. Seriously.
And the thing is, I was waiting because I've seen it. I knew it, but I was just waiting for the punch, and it's never not funny.
No,
it's
that's right.
Never not funny, because it's good. It's good writing. Yeah. I mean, I particularly enjoy the episode with Arthur as well. You're talking about Chrysalis. There's one where he meets the bookworm. Hmm. In fact, the bookworm's in a handful of episodes, but there's one specific where he meets the bookworm, and the bookworm is intelligent because he eats books. So then Arthur starts eating books as well, and Arthur becomes more intelligent because it's all to do with his diet. Now, it's not a hilariously funny gag, but as a concept, it's brilliant. And again, it's got value. There's a message there for children. Like, if you are what you eat, if you eat junk, and then coincidentally, it's Mavis that comes along and says, "Oh, I don't like you, Arthur, since you've been eating all of this stuff." And it's essentially an early comment on vegetarianism, I think, if I'm perfectly honest. Which is a bit off, but that's essentially what it is. It's like, look, healthy eating's bad for you, okay? Eat some fucking junk, everything in moderation. The messaging is so loud and clear in this. And again, you know, maybe that's us just pulling these connotations out, but everything just seems so direct, you know, and all of those characters are so well observed. Like, of course, like I said, Mavis is too fat to fly. She doesn't really give a fuck. Occasionally she'll have a moment about it, but generally she's just like, this is me, this is who I am, and I'm fine with it. And so again, in that episode, she's coming along going like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. I'm not going to eat the fucking books. Like, you know, have a burger. You know, do what you want. So there's that to it as well. But even the look of Arthur as well. Like, yeah, he's a caterpillar, but it kind of looks like he's wandered in off the magic roundabout.
Yes.
He's got a really surreal kind, and I think it's the color scheme, because he's orange and he's got this kind of blue mask across his eyes.
Well, the rest of it is a bit more neutral, isn't it? The rest of it seems a bit more based in something. Like, you know, think of Moog as an example. He's a very sort of tawdry beige with sort of darker brown ears. You know, there's not a lot outstanding or sort of spectacular about him. Whereas Arthur seems, Arthur just looks like, as you said, looks like from a completely different fucking show.
Yeah.
And looks totally. Like they just have slotted him in.
Totally, yeah. His whole colour scheme is just weird. And that is the thing. That is the thing with this, is even if the gags don't get you, which if they don't, you probably don't like our shit anyway. So I don't know why you're listening to this, because it's genuinely funny. But if the gags don't get you and the weirdness doesn't get you, then I think just to look at, it's just visually interesting. The animation is good. Like, the character designs are good. Like, it's just everything about it is just wonderful and so uniquely weird and British is the thing. Other country could make this show.
No, I was going to say that we've talked about some shows which, again, had a very inherently British feel to them. Like Trapdoor, again, there's lots of sort of subversive humor in there that wouldn't translate and probably didn't translate elsewhere. I think we talked on that episode about the fact that it did spread as far as it did. It did air as internationally as it did, because the British sense of humor, especially from the sort of the 70s, 80s, possibly up to the early 90s, I think by then it became a bit more mainstream, but it was generally seen as a sort of cut above. You know, you look at the reverence to things like Python and Fawlty Towers are held in. Now, that translated down the line as well. So even though through the kids programs, it's like, oh, fuck no, this is a British thing by Cotsgrove Hall. This is a British thing by whoever. This is going to be a bit cleverer than we used to. And I don't know, if you look at some of the things, there will be some things that compare. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But there will be equivalents of this show from Australia, from America, from Canada, from even parts of Europe, which will have a similar theme or similar context, but won't work in the same way. Because they can't use the same sort of humour, so they need longer to build up to it. They need more time to lead into gags. And the gags tend to be a little less on the nose, but because they're more subtle, they don't work in the same way. Whereas the gags here aren't subtle. So the one I mentioned from Thoughts of Moo, where he lands on Edna and says, "I'm on television." That it's in its basest form. It's a very easy pun, but it's pulled off in such a way that you automatically laugh at it because you think, "Oh fucking hell, yeah, he's on TV." And whereas Americans trying to do that, "I'm on the television set." Oh, that's not fucking funny, is it?
No, it's down to, it's a good gag, but it's also, you're absolutely right, it's again, the performance and just the delivery and the genius comic timing and just the sheer charisma of Kenneth Williams, even doing all of these different voices, like he just, every one of these characters absolutely shines. Yes. It's interesting you drew the comparisons with America and Australian things as well, because I've actually spent a great deal of time leading up to this show, because I have rewatched Will of the Wisp, but as I say, I did it all in one afternoon and I had a good knowledge of it anyway, so I haven't had to do my usual kind of try and cram in as many episodes as I can. So I've spent a great deal of time thinking in the run-up to this, and I was trying to think what kind of the nearest sort of transatlantic equivalent of Will o' the Wisp was, and I keep coming back to Roger Ramjet.
Yeah.
Even though obviously they're fundamentally different in that one's about kind of a superhero kind of Captain America style character, and this is a gentle bunch of stories about Doyley Wood, I think they share a lot in their weirdness and in the fact that they're very, very short and pointless and just exist purely to get a gag in.
Yeah.
And it's A to B, here's the gag. And in the quality of the writing that comes with that, we've mentioned before when you're dealing in short form that like you can have no wasted space whatsoever. When you've got 5 minutes, even just telling a gag in 5 minutes is hard. You can't waste any time whatsoever. And this doesn't, and nor does Roger Ramjet. They're both just slick as anything.
To add to that, I mean, you said they're pointless, but they're pointless, but they're actually quite pointed as well in terms of if you look for it, there is subtext there, like you talked about the early dig of vegetarianism. There's stuff like that, and you had that in Roger Ramjet as well, and we talked about that when we looked at that. So it's there, but it doesn't bash you over the head with it. I mean, it doesn't have the sort of message that a Captain Planet had, but it gets its point across just as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. Actually, I think pointless was probably the wrong choice
Word. I don't think it's wrong word. I think because there's an element of pointlessness to it. You know, it's not about anything, or seemingly not about anything. It's a knockabout, throwaway 5 minutes whereby there's some pretty colours on the screen and there's some characters we know, and they'll tell a joke at the end.
Yeah, I think
if you're of the age that they're aiming at, that works.
Yeah,
and so I think in that respect, yes, there is a pointlessness to it. But it's only when you start looking at it, you start looking at a bit of deeper meaning. And I'm not talking that when you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, looking back at it and going, right, okay, well, there's this subtext and this really fucking obvious message. Even when you're a slightly older child, you start getting to this, so you're 9, 10, 11, that sort of age. There's stuff in there that you wouldn't have picked up when you were younger, but there are messages there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think more what I was getting at then was, yes, there's definitely a point to the episodes. They all communicate a message. They all have something to say. It's more that narratively, they don't follow what we would call a traditional narrative arc. Then there's no hero's journey. There's no three act structure. There's no story arc in any way, shape or form. Here is a gag. And this week, the gag is going to be at the expense of this. And don't get me wrong, we can sing its praises, and we have done. There is some nasty shit in here as well, but it's the 80s. So, and I'm not talking about racism or homophobia or anything nasty like that. I'm not talking anything like that. But there is, like I say, there are very pointed digs at Mavis's weight. There is, if you want it, there's reading into sort of healthy eating and that lifestyle. There are all sorts of just pointed barbs that you can pull out of this. But again, and we've said this before as well, it doesn't excuse things, but you have to take the times as they were. And this was the Britain in the 80s. It was a fucking hard-nosed, horrible place. So this is how you deal with things, you know?
Yeah, that's right. You knock them down, you make them seem ridiculous. That's the whole point of it.
Exactly.
And they did the same with Moog. Moog was the stupidest stupid thing that was ever stupid. They kind of went out of their way to make it that he's so stupid he shouldn't be allowed to think, because when he thinks, things go wrong.
Yeah.
They're making a point that there are people who are treated like that, and that shouldn't fucking happen. But just for the shit of it, we'll make him think, and we'll show there is a consequence to it. But at the end of the day, it'll all be all right.
Yeah, and look, maybe I'm getting on my high horse a bit because, as I say, I wrote a whole fucking paper about this very topic. And maybe I'm looking too deep, I don't know, but it is there. You don't have to look very deep, it's surface level, it is there. Now, whether it was intended or not, we will never know because we are not the creators. And that's the beautiful thing about creating any work of art, is the second you finish it, and you never will, but the second you release it, then it ceases to become yours.
Yes.
And, you know, look, there are all sorts of theories that will argue the toss with that as well. I personally don't really subscribe to auteur theory. Okay. I think everything is always in the hands of the audience. And if I read that out of it, then it is there. Now, whether it was the intent to put that in there or not, we will never know.
Yeah.
But where there is choice, there is meaning. Somebody, like, you know, these stories could have been about anything. And yeah, and some, exactly. You know, in some cases, even with the creators, it may have been subconscious. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
And that's always been my thing as well. I mean, I remember having this argument fucking way back when I was at school. I might have been doing A level, so at some point between 15 and 18, having this argument that it's all well and good somebody saying, well, the author meant this, or this means that, this symbolizes that. Does it? How do we know that? Because somebody's told us that. I read this, that, and the other. This is how I've interpreted it. So therefore, that is equally as valid. As long as I can back that up, then it's as valid as you saying it's been in some textbook for 50 fucking years.
Yeah, because absolutely.
Because nobody writing a textbook book in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s knew Shakespeare. So how the fuck do they know what he was thinking? Yeah, they can look at social context and say, well, this is probably what that means, but it's only this is probably what that means. Not this is why he did that. You will never fucking know.
Nope, you never will. You can only, there is only your truth when you're watching something, and it's what you take away from it, because ultimately that is the most important thing. Now, like I said, to fly in the face of all of that, I am a firm believer that where is choice, there is meaning, okay? Every single thing means something. There is a reason it is there. It's just not necessarily going to mean the same thing to me as it does to the person that created this show.
Yeah.
Having said that, I think we probably are quite in tune, but I'll never know.
Yeah.
What I do know is that what I get from this is just this really gentle subversion of the culture that existed in the 80s that I saw everywhere. And we're not talking about the sheer anarchy that we get in some of these cartoons, you know, and there was sheer anarchy in some of the cartoons at these times. Even if we go slightly later on and we look at things that, like Round the Bend, where they're deliberately trying to subvert things, you know, in as blatant a way as possible. This isn't that. It's very gentle.
Yes.
And because of that, it just is lovely. You know, it's another one of those shows that's just like a big warm blanket, but it's got this, just this little sting in the tail, if you want it. And you know, I always do want that. So just when you get it all wrapped up in this lovely little story about the Moog and licking his bone, you know, then all of a sudden you'll get the sting in the tail, you'll get the end of the gag. And you just remember that you're an adult again, because that's funny. And a kid wouldn't find that funny because they wouldn't understand it. So it's got something there for both generations, you know?
Yeah. And incidentally, it was quite, it did span generations. It did work quite well because of the time slot it was on. It was that sort of 5 minutes before the news started. So I think it was on like 5:35 and then the news started at 5:40.
Yeah.
So it was in that time slot where people would be tuning in for the news. Or their kids would be watching TV before the kids' TV, the kids' channel finished, and they started watching the news and then into primetime and evening shows. And it did remarkably well because so many adults were seeing it because it was on, that all of a sudden it was like, oh, fucking hell, that's good.
There's all of these things as well, isn't there? Where, like, look, kids will watch cartoons, whether they're good or bad. We all did, right? And that's part of the joy of rediscovering them on this show now, because we look back at some of the stuff that we loved and realize that it was absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
But as a kid, we didn't care.
Yeah. But there's other stuff we watched back and gone, oh, it was all right. And now we go, oh, fucking hell.
Exactly, right? Okay, now a kid's just going to watch a cartoon because it's a cartoon and it's on telly. But with an adult, you know, you're going to have to work that bit harder, unless you're a man child like me. You're going to have to work that bit harder to get them involved, like us. Sorry, yeah. But with this, you've already got the fact that, yes, it was on before the news. It's a recognizable character from the fucking British Gas advert.
Yeah.
And it's Kenneth Williams.
Yeah.
So there's all of these things that play to adults. But kids don't fucking care who Kenneth Williams is.
Yeah.
Like, maybe when they're a bit older. Like, I fucking loved Carry On films when I was kind of 8, 9, 10 or whatever. But by that point, I was done with Will O' the Wisp. Yeah. And so that's why Kenneth Williams is always Will O' the Wisp to me first, and the guy from the Carry On films second.
Yeah.
Which probably puts me in a minority, even. Like, it is that very specific few years that I was born that is going to have that, probably from 81 to 85. If you were very early on watching Will O' the Wisp, you think of Kenneth Williams as Will O' the Wisp. Yeah. I guess, I don't know. And like, I'm able to say that because, as I say, it was being rerun over and over and over. So it's one of the earliest fucking things I ever remember seeing. And it's certainly one of the earliest books I ever remember having. Like that sticker book is so just burned into my brain.
Yeah.
That I will always carry this image of a fucking wispy blue Kenneth Williams in there. And it's like you said about the wisps in Brave, I cannot hear the term wisp. I cannot see a will-o'-the-wisp. And they do exist in all kinds of other fantasy stories.
Yes.
I cannot hear that term without thinking of Kenneth Williams and without thinking of this will-o'-the-wisp and without hearing the theme tune as well, incidentally, because that's a fucking banger as well. it's in there. It's like it's running through my head now and has been the whole time we're doing this podcast, and it's only like 25 seconds or something. It's next to nothing.
It's really short. I mean, a lot of the times we put theme tunes on stuff, they do run for fucking, you know, half a minute, sometimes longer.
Oh, I think in editing both the start and the end of this show, I'm going to have to play the whole opening and whole closing credits because it's so fucking short.
Yeah.
But it's catchy as hell.
Yeah.
Like, everything about this show just screams childhood to me. It's got that, you know, sometimes we hit on these when we do this show, sometimes nostalgia is the most powerful drug.
Yes.
And it's the reason why some of these shows sting so badly when we watch them and they're rubbish.
Yes.
Thankfully, that has never, ever been the case with this. It's something I can always look back on, always remember fondly, and just always takes me back to a time and a place. Even watching it as an adult and having watched it at various points through adulthood, and again, even at formative points like my BA, when I'm looking at it in more detail, I don't go back there with it. I go back to being a kid every time I watch it, you know. And there's just something magical about this show. It's fucking wonderful. I think I really do. I can't think of a better show that we could start what is hopefully going to be a better year with.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't have the same baggage with it. I mean, I would have watched this in reruns in about 88, 89, 90, something like that. By which point I'd have been probably too old for it. Mm. I remember it. I certainly remember a lot of the characters. I don't know how the fuck I remember the British Gas adverts. Maybe they were still running periodically by the time I started watching
either.
TV.
But for both of us to do it, they definitely must have been there.
Yeah, they must have been around. No, they must have been around and so still playing it. At sort of that mid-80s point. I've put this on today. I mean, I couldn't remember what we were doing this week. We've had so many discussions about what we're going to do, how we can start the new year. So I couldn't remember where we were. I couldn't remember what show we were on because we do so many shows, and it's just like, which one did we do last? So I was like, okay, this is fine. I can do this. I remember enough about it. I remember they were short, so I can stick a couple on, and it's not really going to break the bank. And I've put two on today, and I've laughed my way through both of them. Because they are short, they are quick, they are pacey as fuck, actually, considering that not a lot happens. The pacing is good, the timing is good. I mean, Kenneth Williams' timing is impeccable. But no, the animation is good. And I've come out of it going, I could quite easily just sit down for an hour and a half and stick these on and chuck all my way through them. Whether the kids would take to them, I don't know, because they're probably not, you know, high octane enough and probably not exciting enough. I mean, that was the problem we had with putting Raggy Dolls on for them, is that they got bored. Because not a lot happened. Granted, they were considerably longer episodes, and there were that many more characters, and they were trying to fit that much more into an episode about very little. So that didn't really take. But I don't know how they would respond to this. But I think it would be better than they did. They have to other things, just because they are shorter and they build up to a very easy gag that even at 6 and 7, they will understand. In some form or other, whether they get, you know, these sort of multiple meanings and the double entendre and stuff, I don't know, but they will get the very base meaning of I'm on TV being I landed on the television.
Yeah.
And they will get that that's a gag. Whether they'll fully understand it, I don't know. And same as with the whole thing of him buying a suit from Moth Bros and trying to turn himself into a moth. You know, it's stupid. It is. but it's stupid enough that they'll take something from it. Whereas I will take something completely different from it, but I'm still sitting there thinking, that's really funny. I shouldn't be laughing at that because I'm nearly 40.
Hey, look, it doesn't matter what age you are. I think funny is funny, okay?
Yes,
and
that's right.
One of the things that annoys me the most in society in general, is this kind of... The animation is thought of as this children's medium.
Yes.
And look, storytelling is storytelling.
Absolutely.
Animation is just the form that they've chosen to tell this story, and it could just have easily have been live action. Wouldn't have looked as good, particularly in the 80s, but it
but
could
it
have
could
been
just have
live
easily been
action.
a kid book, a kid's book,
Yeah,
or a
and
book
you'd
on,
be...
no, a book on tape, and you'd be none, it wouldn't, there would be nothing detrimental to that.
No, you'd be talking about it in an entirely different light. So at the end of the day, funny's funny.
Yeah.
And whether it's animated or not, whether it's a kid's show or not, I could give a shit, to be honest. Like, I likes what I likes. And
yes,
I fucking love Will o' the Wisp. Always have, always will. You know, Will o' the Wisp is, I will refer to people as Will o' the Wisp. It's something I use as a touch point. If somebody keeps popping up everywhere, I'm like, oh, he's like fucking Will o' the Wisp. It's like, just because he's one of those people that will just randomly be in the right place at the right time. That is something that I just have in my vocabulary. I will describe somebody as like Will o' the Wisp, because it's been that formative to me. Just that ever-present image of, like, you know, whenever something happens, you cut back to Kenneth Williams and he just poof, comes out of thin air, makes a shape. And then, you know, quite often he'll kind of, again, talking about the animation, we only touched on it briefly, but the animation of Will o' the Wisp himself, the way he contorts himself into different shapes as he's telling the story, it's so expressionistic. Like when something scary's happening, he'll scrunch himself up into the ball and he'll start shaking. And, you know, when he's telling a tall tale, he'll just leisurely stretch out a little bit. It's absolutely phenomenal.
It is. And I think the only thing I can think of to compare to that is in the Aladdin series, the way they did the genie. That was kind of similar when he was doing anything, or when there was a story being told and he was kind of in the background, you would just see that similar sort of movement whereby, you know, he's listening to the story and he's getting into the story. He's getting closer and closer and closer. And all of a sudden, you know, he's biting his fingernails, or he is stretching out. And it's sometimes it's not even motivated by what's going on. He will just start moving randomly, but in a way that makes sense. And it's the only thing. And I was trying to think earlier on what Will o' the Wisp doing that reminded me of. And it was as we were talking there, I could just sort of see the genie doing it. And I think the colouring probably helps as well, to be honest.
I mean, it definitely does, doesn't it? They're the same fucking colour.
Yeah. So I mean, that was something that it's nicely achieved. It's a nice touch.
I can't believe I've never made that connection. As soon as you said it, the pieces fit together in my head.
Yeah, and as I was thinking about this afternoon, I was trying to work out what it was this afternoon, but it's that, and it's as you were describing it there, I wasn't picturing Will o' the Wisp. I was picturing the genie doing it.
Yeah, they're so similar, aren't they?
Yeah.
And yet this predates that by a good 10 years.
Oh, near 15.
I was going to say more than that, because you have to go back to the British Gas Advert.
Well, yeah,
really,
that's
for
true,
the
actually, near 20.
Will o' the Wisp. Yeah.
I mean, when was the Aladdin series? Was that 93, wasn't that?
Something like that, wasn't it? But I mean, you could go back to the film, couldn't you, and conceivably say...
That was 91 or 92,
I want to say.
Yeah, so I mean, put in development around about 1990, you're still talking 15 years after the British Gas advert.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying Disney copied the genie design from Will o' the Wisp, but they are very fucking similar.
They are. It's not just the colouring, it's a lot of the mannerisms and stuff as well.
It's the tail and everything, isn't it? It's, yeah, very, very, very similar. Even the hands.
Yeah.
Like Will o' the Wisp does a lot of, like, for those of you on video, does a lot of this with his hands, which the genie does as well. There's a lot of articulation with the hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking hell. They're very, very similar, aren't they?
Yeah.
Very similar. That's interesting. That's something I want to do a bit more research on now, actually. I want to know. Maybe there was some Disney animator somewhere who just happened to watch Will o' the Wisp. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, there's not a lot written. I've been looking at the wiki page and trying to find various bits and pieces on other websites, and there's not a huge amount written about this show.
Well, I happen to know for a very good paper about Will o' the Wisp written by a highly intelligent... No. I never published it.
As I say, share it. But so there's not a lot written online about it. It's mentioned in passing in a lot of places, but there's not a lot specifically written about this show.
No. I think it's a show, and I think there are a lot of shows... of this time, of the late 70s and early 80s, that were tremendously impactful on all of us, because we were the TV generation as well.
Yes.
Okay. Like the generation before us, yes, they had TVs, but everything was primetime TV, and kids' TV was not what it was in the 80s and the 90s. It just wasn't.
If you were a kid, you fucked off out to play.
Yeah, exactly. So we were the generation raised by TV, and so there are a lot of these shows from the late 70s and early 80s specifically. That I think are tremendously, but it's why I wrote that paper in the first place. I think are tremendously impactful and have had a huge lasting effect actually on us as adults now, on an entire generation walking around in our society that just a lot of people don't recognize because it goes unsaid, and there hasn't been this love for them. Like there's love for He-Man, and there's love for Turtles, and there's love for Thundercats, and there's love for all the things that sold toys and made this huge commercial bank for the companies involved and had that immediate smash and grab cultural impact. But actually, I think their lasting impact is not the same as something like this, you know, and that's not to say, look, I'm well spoken on He-Man on this show and my love for it, you know, I will always love it, but it doesn't give me the same kind of nostalgia that Will-O-The-Wisp does, because it hasn't just crawled inside my bones in the same way that Will-O-The-Wisp has. I forget what we were talking about a few episodes ago. It may even have been Raggy Dolls when I said there are shows that just live in my soul. And this is one of them, Bagpuss being another, which incidentally there is loads written on Bagpuss, but that did just break through commercially as well. So it had more of a cultural impact. But there are these shows of this time that I think are just uniquely special, and we just don't make shows like this anymore. That's a cliche, I know, but we don't. I mean, in 20 years' time, are two near 40-year-olds going to be sat down talking about Teletubbies? I fucking doubt it. Yeah, tweenies, definitely not. I mean, the Builder, maybe. I don't know.
The Builder, because Bob will still be working on the fucking Millennium Stadium or something. They're trying to finish it. But I don't know. I mean, Teletubbies had a massive cultural input as well. I mean, they popped up everywhere. They've popped up in films. They've popped up in things like The Simpsons and Family Guy. They've been referred to in other things. So there's more chance of them living on than there is something like Tweenies. I think Tweenies was very much just a British thing. I don't even know if it travelled that well.
I don't know, but now I've got the Tweenies song in my head instead of Will O' the Wisp, and I really wish I hadn't, because it's awful.
It is. So who was the one with it? Was it a cape or a fucking blankie?
I don't know. I never actually watched much Tweenies. I just know the theme song.
Yeah, like they were far later than us. I mean, I think they came around when I'd have been about 15. And my little cousin, who's not so that little fucking little anymore, he's 25, but he used to love them when he was little. And he had, he had fucking action figures and books and colouring books and sticker books and CDs for the car and fucking videos and DVD and all this sort of shit. Same as we've talked about other things. There was so much merch with all of that. But you're right, I don't think that they will have the certain. They will be thought about as fondly in fucking 20 years as this is now, as we're talking about this. But I think part of that is that, again, when we were young, back in our day.
I were a lad.
Yeah. When there wasn't that, there weren't that many options. You had BBC and you had ITV, and you watched kids' programs on one or t'other for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And now you watch what was fucking on.
Yeah. now you have channels, and you have on demand, and you've got Netflix and fucking Prime and all the other streaming services. You can find whatever the fuck you want, whenever the fuck you want it. We had two channels for an hour and a half, and then Saturday morning you might have got 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that had to cater from everything from fucking late toddlers and into the preschool and nursery school age, right away up to, I don't know, fucking 12, 13, 14.
I think you're on to something there, actually. I think you've just hit on what I was trying to say, because yes, like Tweenies was a huge commercial thing, but actually, as I mentioned, so was Will-O-The-Wisp when you think about it. I had those books. I had the books on tape. I had the sticker books. I had the records. Wombles was the same. Had the records, had a Womble, had fucking Womble's rubbish collecting kits. Do you know what I mean? All this shit. All of this stuff was still out there. It was just that there was less of it because we just didn't have the saturation that we had sort of from the mid-90s onwards. So you had to latch on to these shows.
Well, that was the thing. Like, even like you talked about, you had Hooky Cable, and then you went on to Satellite and stuff. Even then, like, there were kids' channels, but they then bled into other things.
Mm.
So like Nickelodeon would become something else at like 8 o'clock at night or where it was, and children's channel would become something else.
TNT, I think. Didn't Nickelodeon become TNT?
Something like that.
I want to say it was TNT.
But yeah, like, you know, they weren't broadcasting 24/7. Like CBeebies doesn't broadcast 24/7. It broadcasts from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. But then the children BBC channel will, I think it goes, that goes from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. And then you've got another one called Pop, which literally runs 24 hours a day. And you can always find stuff. Nickelodeon is always, you know, if you've got the right apparatus again, like if you've got Sky, or you can get Nickelodeon, you can get the Disney Channel. If you've got Disney Plus, you can get stuff from there. All this stuff is on all the time. It's always available. So it's no wonder the saturation is there. I mean, I struggled over the Christmas break because my TV was constantly on with one of the kids holding the remote. And so we watch all sorts of shit. But it's from the time they got up in the morning, mainly because I'm a bad parent and couldn't be fucking bothered to do anything with them, they watched TV most of the day. Or the TV was on most of the day with stuff they wanted to watch. And it was only once they fucked off to bed, and because it was Christmas and they're all hopped up in sugar, that was about 10 o'clock in the fucking night. It was only then I could put on something I wanted to watch, which would then be a cartoon, obviously.
irony.
Yeah, but no, they were cartoons that I wanted to watch. You know, not fucking, 16 hours of, I can't remember what they were watching now, some fucking horseshit. But, there was one point where number two had Minecraft videos on YouTube because, because that's what he's into. So he's watching people playing Minecraft. And so, even to that point, you think, there's such a saturation of stuff you can watch that you're not even limited to scripted television anymore.
Nope.
It's just whatever shit people want to put on the internet. Hi.
All out there for you all the time. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's I wasn't gonna point it out, but yeah. You know, let's not slag off too many people watching YouTube, eh? And that's coming from somebody that spends a large amount of this Saturday evening watching travel vlogs. So I can't.
Well, you can't fucking go anywhere.
Fuck all. Well, no, but that's why you watch the travel vlogs. And I have done since way before this pandemic.
Me. The whole thing of watching people go in and enjoying somewhere where I can't go because I'm stuck in fucking lockdown. That would bake my sweet. It really would.
Is this the next best thing, I guess, is what it is. Gives you, because then I can start planning a holiday somewhere and it gives me something to look forward to. That's the whole point. Plus, you don't get Judith Chalmers anymore, do you? So you got to watch travel logs on YouTube. I was going to say something else as well before we went on that rabbit. Oh, yes. You were talking about Disney, and I can't let go of this genie thing. By some turn of fate, I'm reaching now into the deep recesses of my brain. I've got a feeling it was Disney that did the reboot in 2005.
Let's see. Playhouse Disney.
There you go. So, yeah.
Well, it aired on Playhouse Disney. Whether they actually produced it, I don't know.
Yeah, I knew Disney were connected somewhere. So now I'm wondering even more whether somebody at Disney was acutely aware of Will-O-The-Wisp.
Quite possibly. I mean, it was 2005. So, I mean, again, you're a fair way removed from Aladdin at that point.
Well, you are, but still, there's executives in Disney somewhere that have gone, yes, that little blue fucker from the gas adverts.
Well, this is the thing that makes me laugh sometimes, because you do see these things coming around, and like you look at Wall-E and you look at Short Circuit, and you think whoever designed Wall-E would have been a kid when Short Circuit was out.
Yeah, fair comment. Yeah.
And no, that little fucking trash collecting robot had to come from somewhere.
He does look a hell of a lot like Johnny Five, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think it's the caterpillar tracks. What it is,
but the basic shape as well. If you think, you look at
the eyes as well, isn't it?
The flaps of the eye, the eyebrows and the eyelids and stuff like that. There's a definite shape to the body, and you think, well, if you can you're making a creature or you're making a character that picks up rubbish and can be any fucking shape in the universe, if you can think it and you can come up with a logical way for it to move and it to do the job, it could be fucking Pac-Man just going along eating things. It could be a it could be a bulldozer that picks stuff up and puts it on its back. It could be anything. But no, you make fucking Johnny Five.
Yeah, good point.
And I mean, it's one of the things, I mean, I've said this when you talk about reboots and some remakes and stuff, where people say, I wanted to remake it because when I was a kid, it meant so much to me. And then they go, fuck it up. If it means that much to you, fucking leave it alone.
Or treat it with respect.
Yes.
Is the thing. And remember what made it special in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And that tends to be the thing that they forget, is what it was they loved about it in the first place that they haven't tried to preserve.
Yes, exactly. So, some people get that right. Most people don't. But as we said numerous times on this podcast, I'm not averse to reboots. If that's your thing, go for it. I will often take the view of either it's something I want in my life or I don't. And if I don't, I won't go anywhere near it with a fucking barge pole. I'll just happily leave things as they are. It's the reason I haven't watched any of the new Ghostbusters stuff. Can't be fucking bothered. Then there are other things that I will. It just depends. Depends on your attachment to the source material and your confidence in the reboot, doesn't it? Yeah. But we're not talking about reboots here and now. We're talking about Will of the Wisp.
Well, we were talking about reboots, so it's...
I guess we were talking about Will of the Wisp reboot, yeah. Which, again, is something that I've never felt the need to even seek out.
I don't think I've seen stills of it. I think it was James Dreyfuss who did the voice, wasn't it?
Well, this is the thing for me, okay? This thing, isn't it? Like, Edna's now a widescreen TV. Look, that makes sense. That's what TVs look like then. And if nothing else, it would have been in a 16:9 aspect ratio anyway. So you may as well make the TV in 16:9 at that point. But for me, it's just no Kenneth Williams, no Will of the Wisp. That easy for me.
I've not seen it, and I've not seen his characterization, but I can imagine James Dreyfuss doing a very exaggerated Kenneth Williams impression.
See, this is the thing, isn't it? Kenneth Williams is like, I was going to say you don't really get performers like Kenneth Williams anymore, but you do. They've just matured slightly. But I think Kenneth Williams as a performer, I think, is actually mistreated quite a lot, because we all think of the bawdy kind of campy carry on stereotype. But actually that kind of overtly camp character takes some real skill to pull off.
Yes.
Because it you tread a very fine line with that, and I think people that can do it well manage to transition into kind of almost becoming these elder statesmen of that genre, and Kenneth Williams is one of those. Like, he is untouchable. In recent years, I would argue Graham Norton has now moved past being just the camp chat show host and into, like, that's his thing now, that's his persona, and he owns
But it's become part of his persona to a point where he uses that, like, his radio show, it's his style is very different. He's not as flamboyant as he is on television, but there, you know, you still do get a lot of that sort of that acerbic, very quick the quick one-liners and stuff like that. You still get that because that's what he's built a lot of his public career on. But then you read, I think he's just released his second or third novel, and you read those, and the voice in those is nothing like the voice you get when he speaks.
There you go. And that's the thing with Kenneth Williams when you look at this as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, we were saying how different his performance is. So it's treading that line, isn't it? And whenever you get somebody that's going to try and imitate that, they aren't going to understand the nuance and the subtlety of it. And incidentally, speaking of Graham Norton as well, for those that haven't seen it yet, he's phenomenal in Soul, and to the point where you absolutely know that it's Graham Norton, but he dials his performance down just enough that you're like, well, it sounds like him, but is it him? I don't know. But again, playing quite a flamboyant character, but taking a different shade.
Yeah.
And I think anytime somebody tries to imitate that kind of persona, you run the risk of it just being cringeworthy. And 90% of the time it is, let's be honest.
Yeah. And like I said, I've not seen any of the 2005 Will of the Wisp.
I was going to say, maybe he hasn't.
It's an assumption on my part, but given again that he's doing all the voices, much like Kenneth Williams, I can imagine at some point there will be a screaming queen, just because that's what he's famous for.
But
and
I think
it's very difficult. And I mean, no, he's a trained professional actor. And no, he has done stuff where he hasn't played that camp, effeminate character. But you look at his more notable roles, and that's what he sticks. That's where he stands out as, particularly Gimme, 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 and Absolutely Fabulous when he was in that.
Yeah. But that's the danger as well, isn't it? Is that whilst Kenneth Williams has that persona in the Carry On films, aside from Will O' the Wisp himself, that's not something he carries through. And even Will O' the Wisp, he plays it more. I get it's almost like that kind of just elder statesman kind of view on it. He's like this sort of slightly effeminate older gentleman ghost character, if you know what I mean. He's not as you put it, a screaming queen. He's just got that slightly effeminate edge to him.
Yeah.
Just slightly camp, because he's this gossipy spirit in the forest. Yeah. It's essentially what he is. He's a nosy neighbor, is what he is. That's Will o' the Wisp for you.
Yes.
He's the one that's gossiping over the garden fence or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he plays it in this kind of, yeah, like he's the elder statesman of the forest. Like, did you see what he did today? What a knobhead and what have you. Whereas...
No, that's an episode I'd like to see.
Yeah.
What a knobhead.
I mean, that's the beast every episode, isn't it? But I think that is the danger, and that is the trap of falling. Now, we are assuming all of this. We haven't seen
it. Absolutely, yeah.
But I don't want to see it, not for that reason, just because, quite frankly, this show, for me, is Kenneth Williams. His performance as Will o' the Wisp anchors the show. His performance as everybody else is just fucking... I cannot believe how good his voice work is.
Yes.
And I don't say that like it shouldn't be that good. Of course it should. Kenneth Williams is a fucking legend. But his voice work is absolutely phenomenal. We all know him as that kind of bawdy camp character from Carry On. We don't know him as this tremendous voice actor that he shows himself to be in this. And honestly, his voice work is up there with the best, I think. The stuff he does
definitely,
is fucking phenomenal. And so I've got no interest in watching this show without him. I think it would lose all of that charm for me.
Yeah, I think a lot of that sort of that nostalgia and that mystique disappears when you start looking at the remake. I mean, I had a similar thing. I think I mentioned previously that when I was about fucking two or three, I loved Popples because they were funny and they were cuddly, and I had one, and that was fine. And then you had this remake that popped up on Netflix a couple of years ago. And I say, Jess has my old Popple. She retrieved it from a box when we moved house, and it's lived in an attic for 30 years. Now all of a sudden, it's back in a kid's bed, and so that's great. So she found it on Netflix and she wanted to watch it, and so I sat down with her, and instead of being this slightly insane, slightly wired, I think I mentioned before they were fucking tweakers. They were all on something.
Mm-hmm.
They were all on fucking barbiturates or something. But from that, you had this cookie cutter fucking show, which could have been Care Bears or fucking unicorns or any bloody thing. And it lost all the charm to a point where you look at it and think, actually, that's not the show I remember. And now whenever you think back to that sort of show now, you think, right, this is a show I loved when I was a kid. But because the remake has kind of got in there, that sours your consciousness a bit. And to a point where thinking, like we talked about this before, so we should put X show on our list and do it. And I think, yeah, but I've seen what that became, and I don't really want to sully the memory of one with the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's certainly the reason why I haven't watched the newer version of Will of the West, because I don't want to know.
Yeah, no, neither do I. I've got no, like I said, my view on remakes is it's either something I want in my life or I don't. And I don't need any more Will of the Wisp. The first two seasons, I've told everything they need to tell. I'm done with it. These 26 episodes, that's it. I'm done. It's fine. That'll do me.
Yeah.
I don't need any more. It's 2 hours at a clip when I want to put it on. I treat it like one long animated feature about nothing. And that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't need any more. This is good enough. And I can keep rewatching it over and over and over. It'll never not be funny. It'll never not be charming. And if I let enough time go between viewings, it's probably been about 4 or 5 years since I last watched Will o' the Wisp. Want to put it on this time. If I give enough time, I still am surprised by the odd, completely random, bonkers thing that just pops up out of nowhere. And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. And that's what you want. At the end of the day, you want something that, I mean, there are shows that, I know you have as well, but there are shows where you sit down and you'll watch it ad fucking nauseum, and you'll get through the box set and you'll start again. Fucking box set, the age on me. You'll get to the end of the run and you start again.
To be fair, anything worth doing that with generally comes in a box set. I will literally go season to season on box sets, and it's the reason I still have DVD players and Blu-ray players and a VHS player, because
I've got
some
one of
this
somewhere.
Stuff just doesn't exist digitally yet. And if it does, it's very poor.
Shit quality.
But don't fucking set me off. We've had that rant on the show before. Don't set me off down that route.
Yeah. I'm on a fixed computer rather than a laptop, so I can't show you. But just down there are some 700 DVDs, which again I'm not getting rid of, even though most of them I can get on Netflix or Prime or wherever, because it's not the fucking same.
Yeah.
It's not right.
No, it's not. It's not.
That thing of changing the disc after four episodes is your time to go for a piss and make another cup of coffee before you start the next disc.
And it's also the point where when you're doing a rewatch of a show like that, you go, okay, that's the end of that one. I can go to bed now.
Yeah.
You can get the next day and watch the next fucking four episodes.
Yeah. Whereas if you're on like Netflix or wherever and it starts the next episode for you, you're like, oh, fuck, okay, I'll watch another one. And it started now. I might as well.
Yep.
And then it's 4 o'clock in the morning. You've got to get up at 5 for work.
Yep. Yep. Netflix is evil. Anyway, I don't think there's too much more to say.
No.
Willow the Wisp, really. Look. If you want it, I can go for about 4 hours on this motherfucker and we can go real deep cuts. But
in which case, I need more coffee.
As we've said before, that's never what this show has been. I cannot recommend this enough to anybody that wants to go and watch it. I think even if you've never seen it before, there is something here for you. And that's rare, I think.
Yes.
Like we often say with these shows, you know, if you watched it before and you loved it, then you'll love it now, or you might be disappointed now. I think this is one of those shows that just transcends. It's such a quality product. It's so well written. And like I said, I'm not talking about the narrative here. I'm talking about the gags, okay? It's so funny. Yeah. It's so fucking weird. And it's just so well performed and well animated and utterly charming.
Yeah.
That I think there's something there for everybody. I think you can come to it fresh now and just enjoy it just as much as you would if you saw it 40 years ago. And you're doing a rewatch. So I can't recommend this show enough, as you've probably gathered from the last hour and change of me sucking it off. Hairy dick and all. But yeah, give it a look.
Oh, it's, fucking hell.
It's readily available. I've got it on DVD. I know it's still out there on DVD. It's on the Cult Kids label, or at least this one was. I don't know if they're still going, but I know they're readily available on eBay and they're not very expensive.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Cult Kids carry a lot of shows from this era. So if anybody does want to see any of those other shows that I was talking about, if you type Cult Kids with a K into eBay, you will find a lot of these.
Yeah.
So... yeah,
I mean, I did look. I did the same. I was looking to see if I could find it, and found lots of DVDs, but I couldn't get them delivered in time. So I had to resort to less obvious means. But yeah, I mean, I'm the same. I don't have the same level of baggage with it that you do. As I've said, no, I don't have the same affection for it or the same familiarity with it as you do. But yeah, I mean, I've come back to it as I picked up a couple of years ago and thought they were really funny. I picked up a couple today, and I've been stood in the kitchen laughing while I'm cooking to the point where people are coming out and asking what I'm laughing at. And it's like, yeah, I would show you, but then I've got to share my screen, so fuck off. it's that sort of thing. And I'm the same. It's, if you haven't seen it before, there's still enough in it where it's 5 minutes and it's a gag. No, you go in for a particularly, for a particularly big shit. You can get through a couple of them while you're in the bathroom. They're not difficult to watch. You'll sit there and you'll just chuckle to yourself fucking quietly, and then you'll get to the end and it'll be bang.
Yep.
And it's just a big gag. They've been setting up from the beginning, but you half the time you still don't work it out. You know, the gags are so fucking random sometimes. They seem to come from nowhere. But that's why the punch works, because all of a sudden it's like, oh, I didn't fucking see that coming.
Yeah.
You know, it's really special. And we've seen so many shows where we've remembered them doing things like that, but then when we've rewatched them, they really haven't. They haven't delivered. And this one, I was so pleasantly surprised by. I mean, I will quite happily steal that. When we're out of lockdown, I'll steal that DVD off you.
By all means, yeah. By all means, take a look. And like, honestly, I've watched the whole thing through for God knows how many times now, but I watched the whole thing through again to do this show. And there's, 26 episodes, there's not a bad one. Hmm. There's genuinely not. Like, yes, some are phenomenal and some are good. There's not a bad one, though. They're all funny as hell, weird as hell.
Yeah.
And just, it's a wonderful show. It really is a wonderful show. So, yeah, like, go out and find it wherever you need to, but give it a look. If you liked it before, you'll love it now. And if you didn't, then please go and watch it, because I promise you'll love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as always, we may be completely off piste with this. Let us know if you have a different opinion, or if you have the same opinion and you want to share it with us. So get in touch on Twitter at SMPDpod.
And if you've seen the reboot as well, because we've had a whole lot of just what we think it is, but none of us have actually watched it. So we're barking up the wrong tree and it's really fucking good, let me know. If I can get a genuine recommendation out there, if you can give me a good reason to watch it, I'm not going to take much persuading, I don't think. But you know, I need to know that it's at least on par with the original, and I don't think it will be. So
yeah. I don't know whether it'll be on par, but you know, I'd like to be surprised. So yeah, as Chris said, now if you have seen it, you do know it, let us know. Get in touch on Twitter at SMPDpod, on Facebook and on YouTube with the Double Done Podcast Network. Check us out there. You can go to our website, ddpodcast.net, where you can find our previous episodes and our other shows as well. Wherever you get your podcasts from, be it iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Amazon Music, etc., give us a like, share, subscribe, leave us a comment, and we'll get back to you. But until next time.
See you later.